Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
From Jordan-Hare Stadium to Auburn Arena. From the plains to the recruiting trail and all points in between. If it's Auburn, we've got it covered.
Did I say War Eagle or War Eagle? That's it. War Eagle.
This is the Auburn Undercover Podcast with Brandon Marcello.
Hey everybody, this is Brandon Marcello. Welcome to the Roundtable. I'm joined by Jason Caldwell, Philip Marshall, and Keith Niebuhr today. Still no sports. Not going to be sports for a while, as we all know. But, gentlemen, I know most of us have been cooped up in the house and getting out as much as we can as far as around the neighborhoods and walking around doing everything. But how's the situation with the coronavirus and our isolation? How are you guys handling that?
I think today is 2 weeks since I've been anywhere other than walking up and down the street from my house. It's all right. I think it's the way I've kind of looked at it, it's probably not as hard for me. For sure, because I don't have any young children. But also, I think, and all of us do this, we all work at home, which might make it a little easier than it is for somebody that's accustomed to getting up and going into an office somewhere or whatever. But I have my days when I think, you know, I don't know how much more I'd handle this. I want to go somewhere and do something. But so far, so good.
Keith, what are you doing in the
like Philip, I'm taking some walks. You know, the thing is, recruiting's still going on. So I've actually probably got the easiest job. You know, you guys cover stuff. You guys can react to things. And at that, you're the best in the Auburn market and probably the state of Alabama, if we're being honest here. But recruiting, for me, I'm lucky. It's still going on. There's still – Auburn's still talking to kids, still FaceTiming kids. So – you know, I'm contacting them, but in my spare time, watching Billions on Showtime, binge watching, and I've really been, you know, I can't go out and hit golf balls, and that's what I love to do more than anything in this world. So I've been watching, and Philip will remember this, the old Shell's Wonderful World of Golfs, and they're all over YouTube, and it's awesome. I don't want to bore you guys too much, but it's really awesome for me, and I'm sure Jason will agree, watching these, going back 40, 50, 60 years, watching how the old guys swung the club. And seeing how much this golf swing has changed since even Ben Hogan played, because there was so much wrist action back then. And Sam Snead came along and really kind of was the big shot when it came to what they call the one form or the one piece swing, which meant you didn't really break your wrists until you really got above your head. And it's been just awesome kind of reconnecting with my love of golf and watching the Masters from 1975 when Nicholas, you know, bested Johnny Miller and Tom Weisskopf. So I love history. You guys know that. So I'm kind of, you know, one eye on the present, one eye on the future, and the eyes in the back of my head, I guess, or the back of my brain, just looking back into the past and enjoying some old golf. I mean, I love watching golf more than anything because I like studying the swing. So that's been keeping me pretty busy, to be honest with you. I just enjoy that stuff, being the nerd that I am.
Hey, Keith, I actually literally broke my wrist playing golf or cracked it. True story, I had my ball was right up against the tree.
Oh, boy.
I understand now, I'm probably the worst golfer ever. But so I was going to try to hit it out from under, kind of in the roots right up against the tree. And I drew back and swung as hard as I could, gripping the ball, the club as hard as I could. And I hit the tree dead center.
You know, it's funny.
And it cracked my It was a hairline fracture, but it cracked my wrist.
Yeah, it's, you know, you can get hurt playing golf. I mean, I've been hit by other people's shots. I'll never forget, my father passed away many years ago, but one of the last times we played a course in Florida that had a big ravine right in front of the green. And I always let my ball just go. If I hit one in the muck, I don't know if Jason, Brandon, I don't know how you guys are. I'm scared of snakes. So I usually just bite the bullet and say, I'll just put a new ball. I'll just throw another ball down. But my dad was cheap, and he climbed down this ravine, and he was, you know, probably 12-foot drop. And when he climbed back up, he slipped and fell, tumbled down. And when he finally came back up, he was covered in water and mud, face, you know, mud everywhere. And that's kind of my lasting image of my dad playing golf. But you can get hurt out there, Philip. You ain't the only one, believe me.
Yeah, I'm not crawling down into holes, especially right now. And, looking for golf balls if I lose one. Yeah, that's just going to have to be a casualty of playing if I'm doing that.
I usually lost about 10 every round.
hopefully I don't lose that many. If I do, it would be it would not be an enjoyable round of golf.
I would try to hang on until I could get to the hole near the driving range where I could get me a handful of red stripes and try to finish with him.
And believe me, I played with Jason. He ain't losing too many balls out there, but it's kind of weird. You know, you're just trying to figure out how to pass the time right now. I mean, honestly, a lot of my work and a lot of y'all's work is from home anyway, but it's that freedom to be able to get up and do stuff during the middle of the day that you kind of miss, you know?
Yeah. Fortunately, we're still able to, you know, like the AU club here, it's still open in terms of, hey, you know, go out if you want to go out and walk. And if you want to play, you can ride by yourself or do something like that. So, still the opportunity to do some of that. And so I played one day last week, hopefully get a chance to go out there and walk a little bit this week and try to get a little exercise and play some. But yeah, it's still a strange, you know, scenario where, you know, I'm actually walking down College Street right now here in Auburn, and, you know, a handful of cars come by and that's pretty much it. It's quite different than a normal spring day would be here in Auburn, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm literally like locked up in my office right now where the walls have painted black. I have light out curtains, blackout curtains. So a nuclear bomb could have gone off, and I don't know. So I get out in the afternoons with Jackson, our child. We run around the backyard and push him around in his little car and little Tyke's car and play a little basketball. He's got a basketball goal now, and he's in love with that. And that's about it. I am not leaving my backyard. I'm not going out, even though I've been so tempted the last 2 days. I've been wanting to get out and do stuff. And even though, like, sometimes I'm like, I wouldn't normally go do that, but like now I'm tempted to go do this. I want to go do that, but you know, it's going to be a little bit. And from that standpoint, you know, Auburn, along with other SEC teams, were allowed starting Friday at noon to begin virtual coaching, which means that teams, not just football, but teams across the spectrum at Auburn and other SEC programs could start providing mandatory 2-hour instruction to their players over, you know, video software like Zoom or FaceTime. And my understanding is that Auburn, of course, their football program is going to take advantage of that. Right now, my understanding today, as we record this on a Monday, they are beginning install. And that will continue throughout the week. But what's interesting about all this is the 2-hour limit and exactly what kind of they give to the players moving forward, as far as here's some voluntary things you guys can do to work on all of this, but at least some sense of normalcy returning for football, but a long way to go, of course, before we see them even back on campus, let alone practicing.
Yeah, Brandon, would that be 2 hours per player, like each, you know, or is that 2 hours total for the team? Like I'm saying, could you divide that up into O-line coach Jack McNeil, have his O-line guys for 2 hours, Chad Morrison, the quarterbacks, their 2-hour window, or is that a total thing? That's when I wonder is how that thing is kind of divided up a little bit.
My understanding, it's total. So, you know, my guess is that what's, you know, I'll talk more to some people in the program, but my thought is that they'll probably go, hey, you get 30 minutes, you know, with your position coach, and then we're going to do a 30-minute thing here, and then maybe Gus is doing a team-wide thing for about 10 or 15 minutes or whatever. But it's two hours total, my understanding is, no matter how they split that up. They can't do 2 hours here and here.
That is very little in the way of getting anything done if you're talking about having, you know, 85 guys trying to do something in 2 hours total. Man, that's a it's a step, but that's not much of a step, that's for sure.
You know, I remember when Alabama fired Mike Price after spring practice and hired Mike Shula, and of course technology wasn't the same, but their response was that they sent the players all these videos of you know, their position coach talking and all this stuff, and I don't think it did a whole lot of good. I don't think it did much. It's just not. I mean, certainly it's better than nothing. But it's, you know, you're not going to really effectively install anything until people can get out on the field and do it.
You know, what's strange is, you know, I saw Tom Herman, the Texas coach, today apparently was complaining that the Big 12 is not allowing them to send workout equipment to their players. And the first thing that pops in my head is, are you sending a huge, you know, weight machines out to, is that what you're wanting to do? These, you know, 500-pound machines to players? I don't understand this.
No, me either.
What was funny is it was saying that, basically insinuating that others are doing it.
And right.
Like you said, I mean, who is sending, like, are you mailing dumbbells? Or, I mean, like, you can't send a squat rack in the mail. I mean, like,
right.
You can't do those things. I mean, like, yeah, it was this, once again, it comes off as, oh, well, we're not doing these things. I know somebody else is. Like you said, if you do have proof, where's your proof that people are mailing equipment out to people?
Yeah.
I have a hard time believing that's happening.
I think the
UPS man drive up with this huge weight machine for 85 people.
Yeah.
You know what we're going to learn through all this?
Get that many of them, for one thing.
No.
Through all this, we're going to learn that the coaches that are organized in normal situations are going to be the most normal, most organized now. The guys that are the best recruiters, they're going to be the best recruiters under this situation. The kids that work hard on their own and train hard on their own are going to be ahead of everybody. I mean, you know, this a situation like this is unusual as it is really going to allow the cream in all aspects to kind of rise to the top. The kids that don't take things that seriously are going to fall behind. The same with the recruiters.
You're right.
The recruiters that make excuses, and I'm not saying I know any that do, but the ones that do that don't adjust to this, they're going to fall behind just like they would the other months of the year that are normal. I mean, it's just where the cream is going to rise.
And I think you're right. And I'm laughing at, you know, they're talking to college coaches going, well, we need to, you know, we got to be in June or July to get guys ready. And I'm like, you know, they used to play college football in Philip when guys went home and worked for the summer, and they came back, and two-a-days was actually to get guys in shape for the season.
Right. And there were always guys who, and I wrote a little bit about this, there was guys who came back and you said, wow, man, it's obvious what they've been doing. They've been working hard. And then there were guys that came back that obviously had been eating mama's cookies more than they'd been working out. And you
knew day one which guy would be ready for the opener and which guy was going to take a little while to get into game shape. Those are things you may have to deal with now. And if they think they need 2 months to prepare for a season, then they're saying, I mean, you don't need 2 months to prepare for a season. You know, that's what these guys should be, you know, they've been working out on their own. Obviously, it's going to take a little time, but, hey, now you have to adjust and coach like they did in the 70s, where, you know what, you need to run a little more and maybe spend a little less time on offense and defense and more on conditioning to get prepared for a season.
That's right. They've been spoiled by having their players on campus all summer, working with their strength and conditioning coach all summer. And, of course, it's voluntary, as they say. But And so when practice starts, physical condition is not an issue, and that's maybe for a freshman or two that was late arriving. But for the guys who have been there, it's not an issue. But now, for some of them, it's going to be an issue. That's bound to be. And you'd like to think they would all get themselves ready, but all of them won't. And it's kind of there's. Of course, the first interesting thing is when they come back, but it's going to be a lot of interesting things to observe once they do.
Yeah, I love it. You got spring practice, you know, several weeks there. You got summer conditioning. You got fall camp and, you know, all this stuff. And then you get to the first game and somebody false starts on the first offensive series, you know. And you're thinking, man, what have they been doing the rest of the year? And I know that's looking at it. Kind of in a very simplistic way, but you know, baseball for years did things a certain way. And then that whole Moneyball philosophy came along and now you have a lot of teams that kind of ripped it up, shredded what they were doing before and moved in a different direction. And who's to say that this doesn't lead to a new iteration of what spring practice is or what off season practice or off season conditioning is. We don't know. I don't know. You know, I'd heard a few weeks ago that, and I'm sure you guys heard something similar to this, and I think it's been written even, that OTAs may be the wave of the future, at least in this cycle. That may be their only choice. So who knows? I mean, there may be a different, better way to do this. Football, maybe it's too set in its ways. I don't know. I'm just throwing this out there. But, you know, Philip, you've been doing this a long time, and you've even seen some minor shifts. But, I mean, as long as you've been doing it, they've had spring football, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, it's, and it used to be, longer, it didn't used to have any limits on contact. Spring practice used to be pretty brutal, really. And, yeah, you know, the difference in college football and any other or college sports in general is the players are there all the time. You know, NFL players go home and then they go wherever they're not going to be interested in coming back in the summer for or the spring for 2 or 3 weeks of spring practice. And but also that's different because, you know, if the guy doesn't do what he's supposed to do, he'll find himself unemployed. And so, I it's hard for me to see OTAs being a thing and in college, but who knows what's going to be the end result of all this. I mean, it's maybe they'll just say, you know, we didn't need spring practice to begin with.
I absolutely think that because of the concussion issue as well,
yeah, tack exactly. That on,
they're already limiting so much contact. I agree with Keith. I wouldn't be shocked at all to see this thing wind up where you go, we're going to give you a week and a half in July or, you know, 10 days in July to have an OTA training camp or whatever. Then you have you know, that break right there before the season starts, and then you're full bore and have that as your install period, all those things and go on. I wouldn't be shocked to see some of that stuff happen, you know, coming out of this.
I think a big issue is that, you know, if you look at Auburn and then of course campuses around the country in the SEC or whatever, I mean, Auburn's not allowing students on campus until maybe late June. As it stands right now. And from talking to people within the athletics department, their thinking is we haven't decided on anything as far as when student athletes can or cannot come back, but we're most likely going to follow the university's protocol. We're not going to break out of that and make special circumstances for football players just because they're football players. They're still human. They still carry the virus. The other issue is, some of these players, they're all spread across the country, of course. Some of them are going to be in hot spots or already in hot spots. So do you bring them on campus and require them to be in quarantine for 14 days before you're allowed to join team activities and get in that big group and sweat and be in the same locker room as your teammates? That's a big issue. And if you're looking at late June at the earliest of maybe doing some type of, as you guys say, maybe OTA type situations and then doing preseason camp in August, I think that's looking dire at this moment. And we'll talk about this later as we get to questions from listeners, but you know, there is a big concern among administrators and coaches about whether there's even going to be a football season yep. because of that. But we'll talk about that here in a little bit. But I want to start going into these questions we've got from some listeners and our subscribers at Auburn 24/7. First up is T.O. Tiger. He asks, of course, guys, you know, as we all know, as we're recording this here in about an hour, the NCAA is going to make a vote, do a vote, trying to decide whether to give an extra year of eligibility to players in winter and spring sports. It's looking like spring sports will get that, probably not winter sports. But I say that to I'm prefacing this question with knowing that we haven't heard that yet. T.O. Tiger asks, what players would come back, if any, if the NCAA were to give winter sport athletes the ability to play another year? Auburn could go from a team with a lot of new faces to a team with a lot of experience, not to mention if we had a few high-profile players. I'm guessing what T.O. is referring to is basketball, which is what everybody's kind of thinking of. My take is that I might be proven incorrect here in like an hour, but I just don't see them giving an extra year of eligibility in the winter to winter sports.
I don't think there's any chance that happens.
No, I think I would be completely shocked if that happened with everything that's happened, so much of that schedule being going on. And I'm honestly, we'll find out, but I'm not real certain even the spring sports because of the precedent it sets. You mentioned the no football season. I mean, if you start giving out blanket waivers to everybody, and then you have to do that if there's no football season, all of a sudden you're talking about a huge chunk of money involved. I think that's – we'll see, but I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
I'll be very surprised if they don't do that. And as far as who might come back, what I can tell you is I talked to Mickey Dean, the softball coach, last night, actually, and he said all the seniors had expressed quite a bit of excitement about – the possibility of coming back, except for one who has a job situation and a job waiting on her, and she would have to get that worked out, but she wants to. And I think baseball's very different because
much it's different.
Almost a three-year sport anyway. I mean,
well, and there's no real future in softball right now. That's
right.
The thing.
No, of course not.
There's nowhere to go. For baseball, you look at the possibility of a draft, and that's the other kink in this thing is that it could be a 5-round draft, and after that you sign, but the maximum bonus you can get is $20,000. Well, how many guys are willing to do that if they get? Now the question will be, hey, we'll give you a year back, but are they going to pay for that year? Because if you start asking guys then to go, well, we'll give you a year back on the roster, but you still have to pay $75,000 for your tuition, then that's going to cut down on a lot of those people wanting to do that as well.
Well, like Tanner Burns, of course, he'd come back if he wants to anyway.
correct. But the problem is that there's no money for him because you expected him to go in the draft. And then you start having to juggle around because you're not expecting Tanner Burns to be a guy that comes back after his junior year. You know, that's the problem is you start going, it's all money in baseball with 11.7 scholarships. How that works, how you juggle that roster will be the biggest issue because you could potentially have a baseball team with 45 guys on it. How do you make that work? That's going to be a huge issue.
Well, yeah, but from what I've heard, I don't think there's any question that they will that the squad limit size will be adjusted for at least this 1 year.
I think they have to adjust the squad limit size
and the scholarship limit as well. So
but it comes down to not necessarily how many you get, but how you divvy those things up. Are you just going to give them four more scholarships to make it 15 total and then divide it up how it goes? Or, you know, how does that work? That's going to be the issue.
No, according to what I read, Jason, was that they would, the most likely thing is people would get the same scholarship money they had the previous year, whatever that is. Now, but again, a guy like Tanner Burns, I mean, he's not a senior. So is he just going to give everybody another year of eligibility?
That's the thing, Cody Greenhill of the world, those kind of guys. Because if not, those guys are really the guys that get hurt the most in this because they lose their year of, you know, having options and make, you know, say, well, I can always go back to school. Well, now you don't have that option as a senior anymore. You won't have that year because you only played a few games this season.
as a player, you just have to look at it and say, okay, which way am I the best off? I mean, am I better off to go ahead and go and get drafted where I get drafted and take what I can get? Or am I better off to come back and play my senior year? And
that's the issue, is that you say, oh, well, here's your $20,000. Okay, do you want to take that, or are you going to pay $55,000 for another year to go back to school?
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to eliminate a lot of these guys if they only get what they were getting before, because especially seniors, normally seniors are a guy that get the lowest percentage. So that guy may only been on 25% scholarship, and he's from out of state. That's a big chunk that guy would have to pay again.
I've never really quite understood why in some situations, or in this situation, or even in there, instead of saying to the athletic department, you got to write us a check for this guy's scholarship, why doesn't the school just let him go to school free? That's what I mean. It's not like you're talking about a couple of hundred people.
But then you're talking about everybody who's a senior that got, you know, maybe their classes got canceled, something like that. Then that's a benefit for a student athlete that the regular student doesn't get. And so that becomes an NCAA issue then. It sounds good, and it should be that way, but there would be a benefit that you know, everybody else couldn't get.
Yeah.
What about the tab of the cost of attendance check of bringing an X number of athletes back? What's the total tab going to be up for a university's athletic department? Significant, right? Yeah.
Well, it's going to be, to me, it's really significant if you're Wofford or somebody like that. I don't really see it as significant for Auburn or Alabama or Georgia or Florida or Tennessee, et cetera. I don't know.
the thing that makes it significant, in my opinion, is if this does go and you say, all right, we're going to do that, well, then there's no football season, and they go, well, you gave everybody else their year back, where's my year back? And then all of a sudden you're talking about full rides for, all right, say you got 20 seniors, 13 of them are guys that have no chance to get drafted, but they want to come back and play another year. That's 13 full scholarships for another full year. That's where everybody involved then becomes a
But let me ask this question though, Jason.
Yeah.
If they suddenly said today if this wasn't even going on, and they said we're raising the scholarship limit from 25 to 40. Which at one time it was. You think they'd pay the money for those 40 scholarships? I do, every time.
Yeah. Do you think Ball State does?
No, but that's where
the divide comes in. It's not the SEC. This is an entire country and everybody voting, and those people are going to go, look, can we afford that? The SEC can afford it. The Big Ten can afford it. Heck, even you think the Pac-12 isn't?
Well, I don't think they would ever do anything that would say you have to do this. I think it'd be you can do this.
Well, but I get back to the vote about the third baseball assistant. They could have done that and said, hey, if you want a third baseball assistant, you can have one. But they said, nope, if we're not going to do it, you're not either. That's the concern I have with these things going, well, if we're not going to do it, then we're not going to let you do it either. Even though it doesn't, and it's not fair to the student athlete, but hey, it's money talk sometimes.
This NCAA group council, whatever that votes on it, is dominated by Power Five schools. I don't believe the smaller schools can outvote them on this. But I read one place that at least one Power Five conference is against it, and I don't know which one. But who knows? We'll find out here, as Brad said, in a little while.
But we'll see. Moving on, Kevin Barnes says, no question, only thanks. You guys have done your best to be creative in this most bizarre, unfortunate set of circumstances to provide an outlet. Keep it up, and like y'all, I can't wait for a whistle to blow, a shout of play ball, a scoreboard glow indicating normal has returned. Yeah, thanks, Kevin. You know, Philip and Jason have done some great series. Phillip's going through 50 years of Auburn football, telling a story from each season that he's been around. Jason's doing some photo galleries from previous seasons. He's doing a series called The Rest of the Story right now. Some really good stuff talking to people from the past. in Auburn history, providing a new perspective on things during their time on the Plains. Some really good stuff up on our website right now. We've got a few more things starting up this week that I don't want to give away that we'll be starting up too, that I think you guys are really going to enjoy.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents.
Hands where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back.
About to set it all on fire.
New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10, 9 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Okay, so we got a question from a Twitter account called 16 Days Until Jalen Green Commits. What's your feeling about Jalen Green? Do you guys still feel good about him? And I guess he's referring directly to some of our crystal ball predictions for Jalen Green. Jalen Green, of course, blue chip guard that will be, I guess, making his decision when? April 15th or so, it looks like?
Yeah, it's going to be the last part of April. Nobody has a specific day yet for him. I don't think he said. I think he's just saying late April, and he's really got four choices, three colleges or go playing professionally overseas. You know, the colleges are Memphis, Auburn, and Oregon, I think. And, you know, I think right now, you know, we talked to his coach about a month ago at Prolific Prep, which is in Napa, California. And I should point out he's from Fresno, which isn't that far away. But, you know, he is far away from Napa. You know, 6'5", 185 pounds in that range, combo guard. So he can really bring the ball up the court. He can be a defender on a three, maybe even a four if need be. I mean, he can do a lot of different things. He's a natural scorer. In fact, guys, last offseason, he had a weakness, and it's hard to believe the guy that's a top five national player has a weakness, a guy that would be, if they could go in the draft, would be a surefire, you know, top 10, top 15 pick this year. But he did have a weakness, and it was his outside shot. So he went and trained with a private coach that actually trained Steph Curry. And they say that has really taken his shooting, outside shooting, to the next level. A big season, 30 points, a handful of assists, handful of rebounds a game. For one of those schools, that Prolific Prep, that plays a national schedule, there aren't many, you know, guys, we've all covered high school basketball, and even the elite teams in most of the states we're from, you know, they would have a bunch of those games where you're like, oh my goodness, I got to watch this. He's 75-23, stuff like that. His school played more of a national, almost a world level schedule, teams out of Canada and the United States. Excuse me. So he did all this big stuff against big time programs. So the question is, going to go, and it's our understanding that, and we thought this, Brandon and I, and I know Jason too, have thought this for a while based on our intel, that Auburn probably was sitting in the best spot if he decided not to play professionally overseas. Now, there's been some mixed conversations on that, mixed opinions of that. He's brought it up enough that makes you think he's strongly considering playing overseas, but very close with the Auburn staff, very close with Bruce Pearl. I think Ira Bowman, I want to say, is one of his main recruiters. Very close with Sharif Cooper, the five-star point guard that's already signed with Auburn. They know each other really heavily from the off-season basketball circuit. And I think there is some level of confidence at Auburn. We'll see, though.
I think one of the things to look at here, as you mentioned, talking about playing professionally and doing it overseas, that would have to be a concern right now. Would a league be taking place, but what happens if you get over there and something else happens again and you get stuck in China as an 18-year-old for 6 months, you know, and quarantined? I think that, to me, that's something that probably works in Auburn's favor a little bit, is that I would be really concerned about traveling somewhere else to go play basketball for, you know, 6-7 months, you know, right out of high school.
What a remarkable turn of events that these kind of players are that Auburn would be leading or in the best spot for these five-star players. That's remarkable if you've been around it as long as I have.
Well, and if you could somehow keep Isaac Okoro from turning pro, but you can dream, right? But it's if you can get Jalen Green, then all of a sudden you have what you would consider one of the truly elite backcourts coming in. And, you know, what do they say this time of year in the NCAA tournament? Look at last year. Look no further than last year. As great as Chuma Akiki was, Austin Rivers had some big moments in that NCAA tournament last year. But, boy, those guards were good. Man, they were good. I mean, just out of this world good. And so maybe that could keep Auburn on that high plane, having those guys. Even, you know, like Jalen Green's probably a guy that's a one and done, and his high school coach told me, look, he's almost certainly a one and done. A big part of his decision is he wants to make sure he gets that to play in the NCAA tournament. Now, gosh, if he would have played this year, think about that unfortunate situation. But his 1 year, and look, there's no guarantee he's going to be a one and done, but the feeling is he probably would be. So he wanted to make sure that wherever he goes would be a team that would be an NCAA tournament team. So he was looking at a lot of things, or has been looking at a lot of things, on the basketball court, who these teams have returning, and quite frankly, guys, things off the basketball court to see what program would be the best fit. But Sharif Cooper is probably a guy that's a multi-year guy in college, yeah, based on his size. But you get those two guys together, they've kind of wanted to play together for a while. And then you look at some of the pieces coming back. Jalen Williams getting a little bit better each game. Devin Cambridge, you know, obviously they're going to need some big guys. There's no question about that. And still in the hunt for five-star power forward Greg Brown out of Texas. Some people think he may be leaning Texas now with Shaka Smart's future, at least for one more year, guys, looking secure. So Auburn is really in position to have a nice class. I mean, really, not just nice, elite. You look who they've already got on board, 6'6 forward Chris Moore out of West Memphis. I should point out Gatorade Player of the Year in the state of Memphis. You've got the great shooter out of Kentucky. You've got Sharif Cooper. You add Jalen Green and one post player or two. And then obviously Bruce Pearl's looking at some grad transfers out there, looking at that market for guys that he can plug in and maybe be starters, maybe be role players. I mean, you've got to have those key role players to go deep in the NCAA tournament as well. But you're right, Philip. It's, you know, I grew up in Florida, and a guy I saw play in high school way back when I was a kid, Frank Ford. I'm really lucky. I'm probably one of the few people that cover Auburn that saw him play in high school. And, he was the first Mr. Basketball in the state of Florida. And Philip, I bet that was a big deal 30 years ago, 35 years ago, just to get a Mr. Basketball. Now you're talking about multiple Mr. Basketballs. Sharif Cooper was the USA Today National Player of the Year last year. Jalen Green's a top five national recruit. Sharif Cooper's a five-star. He's a five-star. I mean, it's unbelievable.
The last time, really, you know, when Sonny was going to five straight NCAA tournaments, you know, you mentioned Frank Ford. But Barkley was not he was a recruit some people wanted, but he was not anything like rated like these guys are, nor was Chuck Person. And obviously those two guys ended up being among the greatest ever at Auburn. And Chris Morris was one everybody wanted. And another one from Phoenix City named Michael Jones was one everybody wanted, but it turned out he has had too many issues and didn't make it. But this is really unprecedented. I mean, Charles Barkley, if there had been stars, then Charles would not have been a five-star recruit. Chuck probably would not have been at Brantley. Chris Morris would have been. Frank Ford would have been. So that's the last time they were able to recruit like this on a regular basis.
Moving over to football, Dan asks, I know this is a random question, but if you had to guess, how many years until Auburn updates the exterior facade of Jordan-Hare Stadium and the end zone? 10 years? I don't know. There's no timeline, man. They're not even talking about it.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not – I agree that it needs it, but it has needed it for a long time, and – that hasn't been a priority, and I don't have any sense that it's any kind of priority now or even on the table for discussion, actually.
When does Halley's Comet come again?
It's pretty interesting. If people could be a fly on the wall on some of these Saturdays when me and Keith are waiting on recruits or kind of watching, we have so many discussions about things that, hey, you'd like to see this done, what you could do to this, that I think it might have an interesting podcast just in itself, just to talk about some of these thoughts on facilities and all that. But I think you're right. There's not even any talk of that. When you talk about building a football performance facility right now, then you're not, you know, that's where it is. You got baseball going on, softball going on, all these things. I think to plan something like that would be a couple of years out. Then it's a couple of years out before it gets going. So yeah, I think it's quite a while.
That's a very expensive proposition.
Too. Yeah. And I know last year when they were developing their master plan, anything involving JHS wasn't even discussed in that master plan. So,
and it wasn't that long ago, right? Now, Philip, Jason, and Brandon, you guys cover this, but it wasn't that long ago when that was part of the master plan, right? Weren't there preliminary designs for the stadium about 5, 6, 7 years ago?
Oh yeah, when they were going to the north end zone, yeah.
Yes.
Oh yeah, they tried to sell it to the board of trustees. Jay Jacobs did, and they were basically appalled by the. I think the plan for how they were going to pay for it and rejected it. It really has been gone ever since.
Yep. And the crazy thing is that the plan to pay for it, which was, I think was going to be adding more sky boxes, doing those things in the end zone, similar to what a South Carolina, Florida, some of these places have. That's exactly then what happened at midfield later on when the press box was moved to add more. Premium seating is where it's at. It's not adding more seats. And that would have been a great way and still is a great way, in my opinion. You could knock out the entire north end zone, rebuild it with a, lower section, premium seating, sky boxes, those things that would double as, hey, wedding reception areas, all these things that you could use them for throughout the year to bring back more money for your athletic department. It just makes too much sense not to do at some point, but it doesn't sound like it's anything, in the short term.
That's going to get, it will be done someday. But even then, I'm not sure they're going to brick the facade of the stadium. I personally think it needs it. I remember Florida State Stadium, before it was bricked, it looked like an erector set. And now it looks great. And I think the same thing would be true of Jordan-Hare Stadium. But I've never really felt a whole lot of agreement on that from anybody that mattered. It's always been like, well, yeah, that'd be nice, but we got other things that we need.
Rusty Owens is going to end the podcast with the question that's on everybody's mind, the ultimate question. What are your thoughts on whether we have a football season in the fall? If not, do we push this year's schedule to next year or stick with, I guess what he's saying is if not, do we push this year's schedule to January or February, or do we just move on and say there wasn't a season and wait for 2021?
I'll go first. My gut feeling is that there will be a season, but that it won't start on September 5th. And again, I found it interesting when Kirk Herbstreit's opinion created such an uproar, and it's just an opinion. And then Reese Davis today had a different opinion, and it's just an opinion, and that's fine. I'm a little bit confused by how people make that to be like it's real news, because it's not like Kirk said, hey, I've been talking to people and I can report that they don't think there's going to be a season. He just gave his opinion. But I think the financial consequences would be so great not to have a season that they will do everything they can. But what we don't know, nobody knows, is they may not have any choice. It just may not work. And then again, it may work fine and they may start on time. But whatever happens, if it's delayed or if they don't have it, then goodness knows about the schedule and stuff like that. There would be so much that had to be worked out on that stuff. Who knows where that would go? I have no clue.
Yeah, because you can't imagine that you know, Alabama and Georgia are going, yeah, let's just skip that season and we'll come back there again in 2021. We'll lose a home game against Auburn. That's not going to happen. You know, I don't know how you would do it. You just back everything up a year.
I think you would just back everything up a year. Odd years.
Well, just like the Olympics did. You basically would do that. But I don't know. In my opinion, I think there's going to be a football season, whether it's backed up or not. Again, I think it's too early to tell for me. I think they're going to have – you're right. There's too much involved unless this thing just, you know, runs out of control.
Never getting better.
Correct. But I think there would be a push to just have something.
I can't imagine in the winter.
Yeah, I'm leaning toward a season two. I'm looking back at this 1925 Auburn football schedule. No, I know Phillip was not covering the team then. No jokes are coming here. But 1925 Auburn started the season on September 26th and wrapped it up on November 26th. There were only 10 games, I think, that year, 9 or 10 games, but 9 games. So I'm with Phillip. I think you could see it move back a little bit, maybe some games taken out. Maybe you just play conference games. I mean, somebody's going to get the short end of this, whether it's everybody or just a few. But, if you make any change to football schedule, it's going to be a significant hit for somebody. There's no question about that.
As late as 1970, Auburn opened the season on September 19th. Yeah. 69, September 20th, 68, September 21st. It used to be that back in the 60s and 50s, that you started practice when you got to school or when most people got to school. September the 1st is when practice started. And the season started the last Saturday in September.
Yeah, even in 82, it was September 11th. So you're talking about the second week of September for a lot of those, even into the 80s. And so I definitely remember being young and even into my teens, Auburn having, you know, quarter systems and not having students band at the game until the third or fourth game of the year.
Right.
So, pushed into September before. I think to me that if you're talking about delayed, I think that's, you know, a more, you know, reasonable thing.
I think non-conference games would be in jeopardy. That's what would be in jeopardy.
Yeah, and again, like we said, the haves and the have-nots. Just what we were talking about earlier, how it would impact baseball and the minor sports or the non-revenue sports. Same thing here. If you're Wofford and you lose that football game against Clemson, that's
a massive.
That's a massive blow. Yeah,
yeah.
There's no question.
And, but that's but you can't have the have-nots without the haves. But some would argue you can't have the haves without the have-nots. So there's two ways of looking at that. But an abbreviated schedule. What if it was just SEC games? You'd have 8 games, everybody playing 8. I mean, yeah. Hey, look. I mean, these are new times. The other question is, if you don't have a vaccine for this thing, if they don't have their arms around it, and you're stretching into the winter months when they think, now they're not sure yet, but they think that those are the worst months. I mean, there are some warm weather countries right now that are struggling too. I think that's what has them confounded a little bit. But the feeling is those colder months are not really conducive for this, you know. So that's something that have to be factored. It'd be interesting, you know, if you lose a whole fall, could the schools say, look, the season's gone, but maybe we can do something in the spring next year. Maybe each team has a 2 or 3 game schedule. Maybe every school gets 1 game in the spring, 1 game to generate revenue. Auburn, Alabama, Florida, Miami, Georgia, South. I mean, something, anything. I think that this is going to test our imaginations potentially if they can't play a season. There's going to be a lot of interesting things thrown out there.
A lot of university presidents having strokes.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt about that.
There was a report from the Sports Business Journal over the weekends that reported that it was being bandied about that maybe they would start the season in July, which there's absolutely no way. I had one administrator in the SEC completely laugh when they heard that. There's no way that happens. But people are just throwing out all kinds of ideas out there about it. And I think, again, the big thing for me is I don't – the season's not going to start on time if players are not allowed to be on campus before August, in my opinion. If they're not on campus in July, there's no way they're going to have a season starting in September, because these coaches are absolutely going to want 2 weeks with these players. And as Notre Dame coach Brian Kelly put it, you need about 4 weeks of strength and conditioning right now before you get into practice time these right. days to help, one, to get them in shape, but two, protect them from injury. I saw a report today about back when the NFL was going through its, you know, kind of work stoppage situation with OTAs and everything in 2011, and injury skyrocketed that season because they didn't get those workouts. So that's something else to consider. But in the end, safety is going to be number one. The number two thing is going to be money. And they've got it. They're going to do everything in their power to play football this season among the Power Five conferences. When that happens, no one knows. And there's really no way to predict it until you start seeing a downward trend with the cases and the deaths and everything. But then it gets into the whole situation of players coming from across the country. Where are the hot spots? And should these players be allowed to be on campus when other students are not on campus? Is that fair or whatever?
Here's the other thing, Brandon, is that those players are going to have to be tested.
Right.
If this is still around. That was one of the things that blew up the NCAA tournament, was when they discovered they couldn't do that at the time. And you're talking about testing 100 players on every team. Or at least the ones that are going to dress out for a given game, which would be 60-something. But that's another issue. And will they be able to do that? I don't know. I think they'll have to if they're going to play. So it's a very, very complex and complicated situation that I don't know how anybody can really – you can guess, I can guess, you can guess, anybody can guess on what might happen, but I don't think anybody really has any kind of grasp on what's going to happen.
I think the thing that the common fan needs to understand is that just because we start seeing a downward trend, and then, okay, so everything seems to be getting back to a not normal, but normalish place, that doesn't mean you start football up tomorrow. And by tomorrow, I mean a month after that. They're going to need some more time before they're able to do that, guys. So you're looking at however long this goes on and we start seeing, you know, shelter in place and social distancing things start, you know, lightening up. And then probably a month after that, maybe you could start a season. But that's quite a long time, because we're looking at 2-3 months at least of this, you know, kind of the guidelines we're all following right now at our own homes. And then, like I said, you'd be looking at another month after that. And when you look at that, that's July 30th as we speak today. You're going into August. So I think there's a football season of some sort. I just don't see it starting on opening weekend as we all expected.
Brandon, here's another thing. I mean, old people like me, just because it starts getting better is not going to make me believe that I can just say, okay, that's it, it's over.
Well, that, and also, I mean, even if you open these games up to crowds, I think it's going to be difficult to fill the stadiums for a couple of reasons. One, the fear of being contagious, but two, money. I mean, there's an economic downturn right now. Right. A lot of people filing for unemployment. There's not going to be full stadiums across the country, even if we do have a football season and they allow fans inside, which that's another whole other issue to discuss. Yeah. Do you allow fans inside the stadium?
Yeah. I think that the thing is, I think obviously they would hate to lose the ticket money and all those things, but the most important thing is to give CBS and ESPN and Fox and whoever their content, their games, so they can get that, so they can get paid.
Here's an interesting TV money, sorry, Philip.
Do what?
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, with recruiting, and I thought you were done. I'm sorry. If you can't have fans in the stands, you probably can't have recruits there, right? So, I mean, the whole recruiting calendar is just going to be take somebody taking a sledgehammer to it.
There is so.
You're right. You're right, Philip.
There are so many things. It's just, it's really kind of unbelievable, really. How many things there are. If they don't start on time, if they play without fans, all those things. I mean, I'm glad I don't have to make those decisions. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, and my thought is if you can't have fans in the stands, that means that you can't have school going on, correct? I mean,
that's the whole thing too. I mean, it's like,
and if school's not going on, then do schools around the country have a large enough place to house a football team and to keep them away from everybody else? And to where they, hey, when we tested everybody, they're clean, and we got to keep them together for an entire football season.
Hey, and here's another issue with that. Then it becomes, so we're just employees now. We're not student athletes.
Correct.
Yeah, there you
correct.
Go.
Well, we still going to class, but
yeah,
it's
you
online.
Still be going to class, just be
but,
online.
But you're like, okay, if you're playing football and you're not allowed, then you're not allowed to leave because then we'd have to check you again and go.
Exactly.
Okay, their families can't visit. All these things that
Man.
If you have a football season, this I think it has to be clear. I think you have to, and I think it has to be clear all the way because if you. If it's just fans in the stands, then what's the difference between that and what's the difference between 85,000 people outside and 50 people locked in a classroom?
Right.
You're probably better off being 85 outside than 50 in a classroom. And so
let me tell you, go ahead, Jason.
No, I just say I think that's something that I believe is going to have to be a situation where it's almost back to normal before this thing happens.
And when you're at a game, you are packed in like sardines. You guys remember before when we used to actually have to pay to go to the games, guys? And you'd be packed in and people rubbing against you, lines, long lines to get in the bathroom. Actually, well, that part we still experience with the Auburn press box. But it was just, you know, you're like cattle in those places. And you're right. I mean, there's going to be a certain fear element there, even if there's an all clear. There's going to be a fear element that keeps many people away, you'd have to think.
I just want to know who's rubbing up against you, Keith.
Well, no, I mean, you know, when you're going in and out of these stadiums, when you're going up and down the concourses in those big at the end of the game, when it's a game that is decided at the last minute and everybody's leaving at once, you're touching people. You're within inches of people. And that's, you know, again, that's what everybody's trying to avoid right now.
Well,
you're not going to have. I agree with what Brandon said earlier. The crowds, even if, unless somehow, which from everything I hear is not going to happen, by September they're saying there's no more danger. Everything's great. Do what you want to do. Unless that happens, there's not going to be many people in the stands anyway because they're not going to go. I wouldn't. And so, and a lot of the people that fill up that stadium outside of the students are not all that young and they're not going to go. They're not going to risk it. I wouldn't, like I said.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like, this whole thing is going to be, it's so complicated and has so many layers. And as Philip said, you got to find a way to have a clear and concise message. Here's what we're going to do. This is how it's going to happen. And this is how it's going to happen at every university. But it's the thing, it's going to be different because here's the thing. New York might be, quote unquote, safer at that point than, say, the Midwest because it's spread there and there's different hot spots. I mean, that's something that we haven't really talked about is that not everybody is equal in this thing as far as the hot spot areas. I mean, like Lee County right now, it's one of the hottest areas in Alabama as far as the cases and everything, but that doesn't mean it's going to be the case in 2 months. It might be Huntsville or this or that. And heck, you might, and like I said about players coming back to campus, you might have a player that's literally stuck in a hot spot that is under a quarantine at that point. We don't know. But worst case scenario, they're in a quarantine. There's no way they can come to campus for that matter. So this is one of those things where I literally think it's going to have to come down to like the 11th hour when they go, okay, we're pretty sure this is all this and that. let's make a decision. I don't think it's something that they can go like a month or even 2 months out or whatever and say, hey, this is what we're going to do. I just don't. It's going to have to be an 11th hour decision.
Oh, I agree. And I'm sure they're talking about what their options would be in various scenarios. But it's just so hard to know what those various scenarios are. I just, I don't know. I'm sure that's way far above my pay grade. I know that.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep an eye on it, everybody. As we said, the NCAA council right now is actually, as we're recording this, is taking their vote about eligibility, extra year of eligibility for spring sports and winter sports. We'll see how that all happens. Of course, there'll be plenty of coverage from the 24/7 sports crew, and of course we'll have Auburn coverage at auburn.247sports, how that affects Auburn moving forward, and of course our series will continue this week and throughout April and May, and hopefully at some point we'll be able to actually discuss, hey, this is what's going on, and we got practices coming up or something like that. But for now, everybody just stay safe. We'll keep trying to crank out content, telling you stories you want to hear. Get your mind off of all this stuff. But hang in there. We appreciate you for stopping by and listening. And until next time, we'll see you down the road.
No one has it covered like 24/7 sports. Go undercover with Auburn Undercover.
Hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.